Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
It's a big world.
It's so bright.
And it's full of small businesses.
Isn't getting discounts great?
Yes!
Yeah, I got carried away.
Risk, reward, opportunity, responsibility. Small business drives our economy. And finally, there's a show talking about it. Think you can be your own boss? Stick around. You'll find out.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Here's Austin Hill.
This is the place where small business owners and independent workers come to talk every week. I am Austin Hill. Welcome to our world. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Take down our number and join us, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We are open for business once again. See, the doors are wide open there. All are welcome. No shoes, no shirt, no service, but that's all right. We are open for business with your questions and comments about small business ownership and being an entrepreneur, being an independent worker, finding work even if you can't find a job, those kinds of things. I'm here to help with that. And my question for you in this episode of our program, it's simply this: is failure ever okay? Is it ever okay for a business to fail? Is that ever a good thing? What do you think about that? Love to get your thoughts on that. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Still to come later this hour, some tips, a little update, if you will, on the freelance economy. There is an emerging entrepreneurial reinvigoration, I guess. I won't call it a revolution. But there's sort of a renewed interest in people just being entrepreneurial and saying, you know, I can't find a job anywhere, but I've got a skill to sell, or I've got a product that maybe people will pay for. And that's happening. And there are some great websites that organize those who have labor and skills and ambition and things to offer customers. It coordinates people, those who are providers, with those who would otherwise pay money for those kinds of services. Tell you about the new, it's sometimes referred to actually as the sharing economy. And we've talked a little bit before about the sharing economy over the last few weekends, over the summer months. But we'll get to an update on that whole new reemergence of entrepreneurship in our country coming up later in this hour. It's an issue that I believe churches and clergy and even those who are lay people in the church, we need to be aware of, and we need to encourage it in healthy directions. We'll get to that. And also, we're going to visit something that's it's central to the way our lifestyle works in the free world, in the Western world. It is kind of a cornerstone to living in a free society. It's very biblical. I believe it's right there implicitly and explicitly in the Old and New Testament if we'd only look for it. And yet it's kind of, I guess, an abstract sort of philosophical concept for some people. It is the concept of the right to private property. Do you believe that people have the right to own property and pretty much within very broad parameters kind of do whatever they want with it? I didn't say that that right to do whatever you want with your property is absolute. A free society puts some boundaries and parameters around things. But my goodness, I don't want to dive into the racial concerns surrounding the uprisings, the protests, the civil unrest in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson, Missouri. But there is an absolute trampling on the rights of private business owners. And it's something that the dominant news media in our country is ignoring. I'm going to talk a little bit about it coming up later in this hour of our program. But it's something that I believe the Christian community needs to be very aware of and much more thoughtful about. Matter of fact, Cal, if we have that audio that I extrapolated from a CNN report, if you have that ready to go, stand by, and I'll tell you when to push the button here in just a second. Thank you. This is from an overnight report on CNN television. It started off as just, you know, peaceful demonstrations and protests. And we have a long celebrated tradition in our country, here in the United States, of what we would call civil disobedience. standing out on the street corner and saying, I'm unhappy about something. Okay, that's a right, I believe, a human right that Christians need to take very, very seriously. But started off as peaceful, and very quickly, private businesses owned by private individuals, most of whom their stories we will never know, private individuals had their property stolen, burned to the ground, just absolutely trashed. Here's a little bit of a report from CNN. Roll it.
What started out as a night of peaceful demonstrations escalated into violence.
There were at least three Molotov cocktails that one of our crews saw. They were thrown onto the roof of a Domino's pizzeria. The police and the fire department were called in, and they were able to put out those flames quickly before much damage was done. But that resulted in a bit of a police show of force here that ultimately culminated with a very, very tense standoff.
The flashpoint, the Ferguson Market and Liquor Store.
This is the police. Police is hurt. We cannot let anyone get hurt.
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
Minutes after the looting, about a dozen people lined up to block the entrance of the convenience store, putting their hands in the air.
All right, so what we can take from that audio there is you had people barging in, breaking down a liquor store and market, which is a privately owned business, so far as we're aware. We don't know who the owner is, but people broke in, stole all kinds of food and beverages and whatever else you'd find in a little market store like that, violated somebody else's property, and then turned and formed a sort of a human wall in front of the building and started chanting, hands up, don't shoot, so as to not let the police in. Very sad state of affairs, and I believe our Christian faith needs to have something to say about this. It most certainly does if we're looking to the scriptures for wisdom on business and the economy and how enterprise, how labor works. Okay? But we have to be looking for it. And it is very explicit and implicit, the rights for me to own material goods, property. When we say property in the economic sense, we're not just talking about real estate. We're talking about the desk that I'm in front of, talking about the microphone that I'm speaking into. We're talking about the mobile phone or the computer or the radio that you're listening to. We're talking about intellectual property, things that you create and put on your hard drive. That's property. And the right to private property, again, as I said, it's implicit and explicit in the scriptures. We need to reacquaint ourselves with that, or perhaps acquaint ourselves for the first time. Because if we just trample on this notion that your property is your property, and my property is my property, we ignore that. That spells very serious trouble, more serious trouble for our culture and our society. So we'll get to more of that coming up later this hour here on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Again, our number 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Question, I'll ask it again, is it ever okay, can it ever be a good thing when a business fails? Now, failure is something that I think over the course of my adult lifetime anyway, living in the United States, I think American Christians have got some pretty good thought going, so to speak, on what it means to fail personally. Many, many years ago, some 22, 23 years ago or so, I worked with a couple of clinical psychologists who have written some wildly popular books in the Christian community, a couple of gentlemen, Dr. John Townsend and Dr. Henry Cloud. And they wrote a very famous book series called the Boundaries Book Series. You may have seen some of those before. They've been interpreted into several different languages and some very good sound, psychologically sound, but very scripturally, biblically, theologically grounded writings on our relationships is what the Boundaries Book Series is about. Interestingly enough, they began the first book on boundaries, illustrating the concept of my personal boundaries, your personal boundaries, the definition of our personhood, so to speak. They began the book illustrating the definition of personhood and the limits to our boundaries by using the illustration of a property line. That's just a little aside. If you've ever read the first Boundaries book, came out, gosh, like I said, early 1990s. But the notion that humans fail and we pick ourselves back up again and we try again, that is something that Drs. Henry Cloud and John Townsend and a whole lot of other great counselors and academicians and theologians and pastors have communicated, I believe, very, very effectively over the course of my lifetime. In fact, I remember when I was working with this gentleman, Dr. John Townsend, he was raising a very young son. I'm sure his son, Ricky, now is probably Richard Townsend and probably is doing very well for himself in his adult years. But I was working with John Townsend when his son, Ricky, was even before he started kindergarten. I remember spending some time once with John Townsend and his son, Ricky, and they're out in the yard, and John was actually throwing a wiffle ball to his son and teaching him how to bat. And it was so cool to me. It made an indelible impression on me. Dr. Townsend would throw the ball. Ricky would swing that little plastic bat, and he would be late, and he just completely, completely missed the ball. He was just so young and so unskilled, and you know, the motor coordination and everything else just wasn't developed. And every time young Ricky would swing at that little wiffle ball and miss it, he'd have a big grin on his face, and he'd look at his daddy and say, "Whoops, I failed again, Daddy." And he'd miss pitch after pitch, pitch after pitch after pitch. And he'd say, "I failed again, Daddy." And the reason he was so happy about telling his daddy, "I failed again," was because he had been taught by his father, the esteemed clinical psychologist and theologian and author, Dr. John Townsend. He had been taught by his dad, failure is an opportunity to learn. Failure is a good thing. Failure moves us forward. And if you've ever seen Dr. Townsend speak or read any of his own books or the Boundaries book series or whatever, there is a biblical underpinning to that. I know one of the things that John Townsend frequently refers to is the references to the failures of the early apostles. I mean, you can go right to the Gospels. I'm looking right now in the book of Luke, where good Dr. Luke, accounting the story of Jesus and Jesus' time on earth, Luke describes how Jesus sent his disciples out to preach the gospel and perform miracles, but he also prepared them in chapter 9. He says, here's how you deal with failure, in essence. He says, if people do not welcome you, shake the dust off your feet when you leave their town as a testimony against them. How strong are those words? That's Jesus telling his early followers, the men that he had selected to start this new thing called the church. That's him basically saying, hey, look, if you face rejection, you don't get a friendly audience. You don't get traction in your market, to use business terms, with articulating the gospel here. Move on. Shake the dust off your feet and move on. It seems to me that we have a pretty healthy understanding of that throughout the Christian community, I would say. Sometimes it's difficult when you're facing failure to understand that and to embrace that, but at least we recognize that idea as a good one, as a biblical one. But then we get into business. Then we get into certain areas of our economy. And failure is believed to be, well, you just feel like you're a disaster if your business shuts down. And we work really hard to prop up certain industries and certain companies, and we don't want to acknowledge failure. And we artificially sustain businesses that maybe have sort of run their course and maybe should be shut down. So again, my question, I'll have more to say about this coming up here in just a few moments, but again, my question, is failure ever a good thing? And if you're teaching, if you're doing diligence, trying to teach the younger generation, your kids, your grandkids, about business and careers and getting a job and having a prosperous and productive professional life, what do you teach them about failure? We'll talk more in moments. Here's our number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. That's our number. I'll take a quick break and come back with more. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Our program rolls on. Don't go away.
Hey, don't mind us. We're just talking about the most important part of the American economy. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. This is the show for business owners of today and tomorrow. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Thank you for being here. I'm in the house every weekend at this same time on this great radio station you're listening to, all the affiliates of the Faith Radio Network. Find our program audio, by the way, anytime at myfaithradio.com. That's mypageradio.com. Join us live real time. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business, where we really do try to understand these issues of the economy and small business ownership and work and making a living. We try to see these things through the lenses of our Christian faith. 877-933-2484 is our number. Is failure ever a good thing, ever acceptable in the world of business? Is it ever sometimes maybe the right choice to make? As a matter of fact, Cal, we didn't do this in dress rehearsal right at this point, but before we get to calls, do we have the movie audio, the motion picture audio that we talked about? Could you get that soundbite ready to go here, please? Yeah, that's it. Okay, it's time to disclose what motion picture this audio comes from. And by the way, this some guys will find it disturbing that I actually was I'm openly going to talk about this film. It's kind of regarded as a quote unquote chick flick, so to speak. My lovely wife Nell recommended this to me, and it was a brilliant suggestion. I'm having some fun here. This is audio that comes from a motion picture called You've Got Mail. Now, You've Got Mail was an interesting movie back, you know, in the early days of email, when people were just getting accustomed to that. What that little announcer voice on, you'd log into AOL and go, You've Got Mail, if you had something in your inbox. That was new and novel back then. And if you're in your teens or your 20s or what have you, what I just said there makes no sense. But stay with me, okay? The movie was called You Got Mail. Meg Ryan starred in the motion picture. And ostensibly, this was kind of at the dawning of the big box store movement in our country. You know, Walmart was building up stores all over the place. There were big book and entertainment retailers. And a lot of people thought that the big box retailers were kind of bullies. And sometimes they were. But the story of You've Got Mail tells a story about this woman, played by actress Meg Ryan, who's managing this, I think it was called the Corner Bookstore. It's this family-owned and operated bookstore, like third-generation ownership in the family. And a big corporate retailer moves in across the street. And she just can't compete. And she has this very difficult moment of truth where an elderly lady that was working for her, well, she confesses to her elderly employee, I'm going to close down the store. Here's kind of what it sounded like. This was actress Meg Ryan. This is from 1998, by the way. Actress Meg Ryan and the late Gene Stapleton. This is a very funny interchange, but there's a lot of truth to it. Roll the audio, please. Hit it.
So, dearie, what have you decided to do?
Close. We're going to close. Close.
Closing the store is the brave thing to do.
Oh, you are such a liar. But thank you.
You are daring to imagine that you could have a different life. Oh, I know it doesn't feel like that. You feel like a big fat failure now. But you're not. You are marching into the unknown, armed with nothing.
Okay, so you're marching into the great unknown armed with nothing. And then she says, hey, have a sandwich. They're sitting there at a dining table eating some food, okay? Sometimes we got to march into the great unknown. So again, my question is it ever okay that a business fails? It's 877-933-2484. To the phones, Dave is up next. Dave, you're on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Austin. Thanks so much for taking my call. How are you doing today?
I am good, sir. What's going on?
Well, you know, I think that it's a great question that you ask, and I think it begs the follow-up questions. You know, is it ever okay for a business to fail? Is that ever a good thing? I think it depends on how you look at it, because business failure means it, you know, could be interpreted as personal failure. But in my take, as long as the person or the people just keep scrapping, there is no such thing as a failure. There may be temporary setbacks, and one of the best examples I know of is my current employer, the Walt Disney Company. And this is not a plug; it's just an example of somebody, Walt Disney, who you know failed miserably, if you want to call it that, or had several setbacks, especially in the early days of his career as an animator.
Sure,
and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with him pitching the story of Oswald the Rabbit to some executives who told him it wasn't creative. They allegedly stole his animators out from under him. Well, now we know in hindsight that Oswald the Rabbit is the answer to a trivia question, and the resulting success is arguably the most recognizable business icon in the world, in the form of a mouse. So,
yes. You know,
and that's just one of numerous stories of people who fail. So I think we do a disservice to people and to businesses when we want to come in and make everything okay, or, you know, through the lens of faith, if we equate God's goodness to the extent to which we got our last blessing or success, you know, we get our own way. Keep fighting. You know, the quote by Teddy Roosevelt, and I'm going to butcher it, but, you know, my hat's off to the man or the woman in the arena who may be bloodied and bruised but hasn't sat on the sidelines and not gotten involved. And to anybody who's listening, myself included, who has had a business setback or business failure, I cheer them on for being in the arena. Don't give up. Come back. Keep fighting. And eventually, we hope something breaks our way.
And learn in the process. Dave, thanks so much for the call. That's great, great advice, and I believe it's very scripturally grounded as well. Is failure a good thing in business? 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
We're on the road to economic recovery, and we're headed towards your future. Now back to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Great to have you with us. I am Austin Hill, and this is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We're open for business with your questions and comments about small business ownership and being an entrepreneur. Still to come, we'll talk a little bit about the all-important right to own and operate private property. It is something that is scripturally grounded. It's been a part of the world history really since the beginning of Western civilization. And quite frankly, it's under attack right now. And I'll play you some audio from an attack on people's right to own and operate their own property. Not absolutely not doing just anything they want, but doing the right thing. The business owners in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson, Missouri, just had their private property trampled on. Why, I don't know. It's the most thoughtless thing in the world, one of them anyway. I think the Christian community needs to speak out about that. We'll get to private property. Also, some tips on finding freelance work if you're looking for a little extra money on the side. Maybe you or the college student that you know is in that category. We'll get to that coming up in just moments. 877-933-2484. Lisa, up next. Lisa, welcome to our program. Hello.
Hello. I would just like to add a little bit of a different dimension. Most of the things that you have said and the other callers have said are I really agree with. But I'd like to look at this from the angle of what I think Christians perceive as, that it is right to help others in time of need. Therefore, if a business is failing, that it is an obligation to come to their rescue. And what I think people fail to understand, or some do, is that there are basic tenets in business, just like there are in the faith. We have basic doctrines in faith and life, and there are basic doctrines in business, such as your show opener does this with the risk and reward, opportunity, responsibility, there's supply and demand, and have a plan. And because those basic tenets are in place for a successful business, when those are violated or not followed or just not aware of out of ignorance, businesses fail. And I would suggest that fail is just an extension of fail. When you bail people
out... Wait a minute, say that again. Failure is just an extension of what?
Bail, B-A-I-L.
Oh.
It's just an extension of fail.
Okay.
That you are prolonging. You're not really fixing anything. You're just prolonging the failure, because people must, as you pointed out and the previous caller, that people need to learn from their mistakes. And there is something godly in that. The Apostle Paul said, I press on. And I've used those three words many times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I press on.
Well, Lisa, I appreciate your point here. And Lisa, thanks very much for the call. Thanks for getting through. To paraphrase, I guess, a little bit what she's saying, Let me pose my previously articulated question a little bit differently. I said before, is it ever okay for businesses to fail? And businesses do fail, and sometimes we can look at that and say, well, ultimately it was a good thing. Better things came because a particular business venture came to a close. Okay? Maybe a different way to look at this. I mean, there's universal agreement here. Statistics show us the vast majority of business startups fail. They just do. That has generally been the case, certainly throughout my lifetime, and I would say throughout the history of the United States of America. And I'm not a business historian per se, but probably throughout the whole history of private enterprise, most ventures fail. That's just the way things go. Maybe the different question that we can ponder is, there's general agreement that, yes, businesses are going to fail. Failure is going to happen. Is it ever a good thing to step back and allow something to fail? That's really the crux of the matter here. And as much as we can say, well, this is what Scripture teaches, you know, as parents, we raise our kids to be able to deal with failure. We allow them to fail from time to time. So, of course, we should let businesses fail from time to time. What happens, though, when, politicians stand on podiums and say, we can't let this bank close, or we have to step up and make sure we save the union jobs at the whatever company, okay? You see where I'm going with that? I mean, when we start putting a human face on things, oh my goodness, if the bank closes, well, individuals will lose their jobs and families will suffer. And what happens if the company that owns a manufacturing plant, well, they're doing okay, but in order to, you know, sustain themselves, they're going to have to shut down this plant over here. And they'll open up another one over there. That's good business sense for them, but there's pain in the closure. My point is there's pain in failure. And a previous caller, a gentleman named Dave, that called a few moments ago, he said, you know, we have this natural human tendency to want to step in and fix it. We understand that as parents, if you're raising a child or a grandchild, my wife and I are raising a teenage son, I understand the parenting dilemma. You can't rush in and rescue and fix everything. Even if you're caring for elderly parents, you can't rush in and fix everything for them, not at all times. It's very difficult to discern at times when you step in and when you don't. But these same dynamics and these same dilemmas that apply to our interpersonal relationships, our family relationships, even as the church functions, you know, do we bail this problem person out of trouble again, or do we let them suffer the consequences of their behavior this time around? I mean, those are very difficult case-by-case scenarios. It applies in business, too. It really, really does. And sometimes businesses fail because they have, you know, they have a natural lifespan just like the seasons do, winter, spring, summer, and fall. Things die, and then there's new birth in the aftermath. Businesses fail because after a while, I mean, they lose their usefulness. Their product or their service is just not what people need or want anymore. That's how our thinking needs to go on this, I think. It's 877-933-2484. Back to the phones. Courtney with us in Boise, Idaho. Courtney, great to have you with us. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Hello.
Hello, Austin. I just wanted to call in and echo what I've been hearing so far about the topic. I think we need to let the market decide which businesses fail and which ones don't. And I think that while there may be cases where we really want to jump in and help, we may want the government to jump in, I think we need to kind of temper those feelings and go through the process. I mean, we have a system that allows creditors to get paid. It's called the bankruptcy system. Mm-hmm. We have those laws in place for a reason, and sometimes, you know, that we have to accept failure is part of life.
It is. And yet, we can say that philosophically, but there is pain and hardship in the midst of that failure.
Well, nobody ever said life was going to be easy for all of us.
Sure.
We all go through trials. We all go through situations in our life where we struggle, where we have to have a test of our faith in some cases, where we have to take a step back and say, you know, what do I need to learn out of this instead of why is this happening to me?
Yeah, no, they're very different questions and a very important point you make. Have you been a part of some business successes, Courtney, and a business venture or two that have failed? I can honestly say I've worked for both. I like one better than the other, but they were all profitable for my education and experience. How about you?
Oh, yeah, I've had both. Matter of fact, in one case, I was let go from a job because the company was struggling, and I was the low man on the totem pole, so I was the first one out the door. And they're still in business, but they continued to struggle, and I've had to make some adjustments to their business plan and their business model in order to stay viable and to continue to be in business. And yeah. I think that's something that I think that a lot of people aren't always able to do. They're not always able to, this part we're failing because of X, Y, or Z. What can we do to fix those X, Y, and Z instead of saying, well, maybe we need to go back and do P, Q, and R instead.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways that we need to approach it, but can do business still? Yes. Should they? Much as we hate to say it, yes. I think that sometimes, you know, failure is what has to happen.
I think you're right about that, sir. Thank you very much for the call. Great to have you with us, and I appreciate your comments very much. 877-933-2484 is our number. 877-933-2484. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Is failure ever something that we should allow, very intentionally allow to happen with a business? I think we're wasting resources and we're creating more pain and hardship for ourselves down the line if sometimes we don't allow a business to fail. How about you? When we come back, more on this. Also, the freelance economy really taking off across the country. We'll tell you about that. And revisiting the right to private property. It's all right here. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Don't go away.
Hey, don't mind us. We're just talking about the most important part of the American economy. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. The economy is terrible and there's no work available? Well, apparently we didn't get the memo. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
You most certainly are, and thank you for being here. Find us anytime, by the way, at austinsbigworld.com. That's our program website, austinsbigworld.com. Spelled just like it sounds with my name, and if you can get over to our network carrier website, myfaithradio.com, you can find our archived program audio there. Available anytime, 24/7. We call that on-demand media content. Isn't that cool? MyFaithRadio.com. You can download it, subscribe to our podcast, and listen. Just click to listen right there on your phone or your computer. 877-933-2484 is our number. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Let's talk about the right to private property. In very broad terms, the right to private property, as I was alluding to earlier, is your right, your liberty. Not because you're an American or because you're a Canadian, if you're listening to us north of the border, one of our Canadian friends, not because you live in the Western world or a free society, that's not the reason why you have the right to possess property, land or computers or paper or any kind of material good that you can use to do business with, to make money with, to provide for yourself with. That's how we define property in economic terms. And your right to possess property and do, in very broad parameters, what you want to do with it, that's not granted you because you happen to live in the U.S. or Canada or Australia or New Zealand or whatever. It's not a geographic thing. I think we can delineate this scripturally. That is a God-given right. And the United States Constitution, as well as, for the most part, the Canadian Constitution, they are structured in such a way that it stipulates the government cannot take that right away from you. Okay, we have to, one follows the other, in other words, and we have to understand that correctly. And by the way, we see the right to private property both implicitly and explicitly in the Old and New Testament. I think of the parables that Jesus taught throughout his earthly ministry and how many times agriculture and agribusiness and enterprise were at the epicenter of his illustration. He didn't say, hey, you, landowner, rich young ruler, as it were, you have no right to own that property. That belongs to the government or that belongs to the collective. No, you need to give away your property. No, he said, you own a lot of stuff. You own property. I'm paraphrasing here with the rich young ruler, but you need to be generous and virtuous and ethical with it. Okay? There is nothing wrong with the right to private property. And yet, the way it gets trampled upon, and most people don't even notice, is very, very disturbing. Case in point, I want to talk a little bit about the social unrest and the uprisings in Ferguson, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis. Now, there was a police-involved shooting there. A young man was killed. Very tragic situation. And a lot of surprises in that whole scenario over the past several days. People ostensibly protesting and expressing their outrage over the shooting, which is understandable, and your ability to express outrage, that's something we need to safeguard as well. But in that process, some people in Ferguson have seen fit to completely trash, obliterate other people's private property. Now, I want to tell you just a little bit about a company called Quick Trip, Q-U-I-K, Trip. Okay, that's a chain, a brand of convenience stores that's actually headquartered in the southern United States. They don't operate universally all over the country. But it is a privately held company. You can't go buy shares of stock in Quick Trip, so far as I know. It's owned by a finite number of individuals. They are also consistently regarded as one of the finest medium-sized companies in the world. Consistently regarded as one of the finest companies to work for. As a matter of fact, Cal, if we have the Quick Trip jingle ready to go here, I want to play this for you. If you can search for this commercial jingle on YouTube. And it's very clearly marked that Quick Trip had nothing to do with producing this jingle. These were just some very enthusiastic customers that got together and wrote a jingle and performed it and produced it. And it sounds pretty good. But this is the kind of loyal consumer base that this chain of convenience stores, mere convenience stores, is the kind of loyalty they produce. Roll the jingle, please. Hit it.
We love Quick Trip. It's 724, a coffee shop, a bakery, fountain drinks galore. Yeah, we love Quick Trip. It's our convenience store, the never-ending service, an always open door. Just around the corner, kitchen's clean and fresh. Guaranteed gasoline that outperforms the rest. Fast and friendly service, just a motto, it's their creed. One stopping point, a shopping joint with everything you need. All the things you want and a whole lot more. We love Quick Trip, Quick Trip. Our convenience store.
Okay, now that's, again, that is not a commercially produced jingle. That's just fans of the Quick Trip store chain that said, man, this store chain is just so great. They really are extraordinary. You wouldn't think that convenience stores could be so extraordinary, but if you've been into convenience stores that are grungy and dirty and poorly stocked and the staff is rude, well, you certainly notice the difference with Quick Trip. I would also have you know, Quick Trip is a part of a what is known as the National Safe Place Movement. Safe Place is a national nonprofit organization that provides safety for troubled or at-risk youth. A troubled underage minor since 1991 has been able to walk into any Quick Trip store and say, I'm in trouble. They will receive free food and beverages. They can hang out in the back room. And staff at Quick Trip, at their own expense, will call authorities, will call a shelter, call a counselor, call a pastor, whatever's needed to get that young person out of trouble. They get nationally, they don't advertise this, but they are nationally recognized as being a safe haven for troubled and at-risk youth. And yet, in the midst of the social chaos that is Ferguson, Missouri, some folks saw fit to go in and literally burn an entire store down to the ground. After people had raided the place, scared the daylights out of the staff and stolen probably a good bit of the resources out of it. Here's what it sounded like. Cal, if we have the Quick Trip looting audio ready to go here. One gentleman caught the looting of the Quick Trip store in Ferguson on his mobile phone. Now it's viral all over the internet. Listen to this.
Well, I had a Quick Trip with ends and started, and looting, ransacking from Quick Trip. Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Don't give you some of that money.
Luna Ransack.
Whatever. Anyway, that very different sound there. The looting, the trash, that was before it got torched, by the way, of course. You heard the glee in people's voice just running out the door with armloads of stuff that they were stealing. Folks, we have got to get to the point where we recognize the profundity, how profoundly important the right to private property is. That wasn't their stuff. I understand the social tension and the injustices perceived and real involved in police force and whatnot. I've got a lot of thoughts myself about police force, believe me. I won't get into that now. That's not what we do here on this program. But to just trash such a well-run, popular, virtuous business, or any business, even if it's not popular, that's not appropriate. And yet, dominant news media completely ignores that. I believe in the Christian community, we need to wake up and start having a voice in those matters. Just wanted to point that out. You know somebody who's headed back to school right now, or soon will be, and they're looking for ways to make extra money on the side. Check out the concept known as the sharing economy. Sharing economy is kind of a misnomer of a term. I don't even like the term, but it's used to describe individuals and groups providing on a very basic freelance basis services, sometimes products, to those who want to pay for them. For example, you have a car and you've got time on your hands where you could provide rides to people, maybe pick them up at the airport, take them to a hotel or whatever. Check out the website uber.com, uber.com. They hook up people who can provide transport on a freelance short notice basis with those who want to pay for it. You're handy around the house. You could provide some service to do repairs or maybe even run errands. Check out the website TaskRabbit.com. That's another one of the freelance websites that's really taking off around the country. And those are just a couple. We've got more information about that on our program website, AustinsBigWorld.com. But there are people making a living, even if they can't find a job. I'm Austin Hill. See you next weekend for Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Have a great week ahead. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. For more information about this, you can visit the Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business program page on myfaithradio.com.